Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure as always. You're going to be glad you stuck with us because our good friend David Dossi is back with us. David is in the old days, we called him patent attorneys. He probably doesn't mind that now, but the correct name, the 21st century term, is intellectual property attorney, because what they do has always been, but really it's now becoming more and more understood that what they do is for all intellectual property, which includes lots of different asset classes. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And I also want to remind you something I've told you before. David is my intellectual property attorney. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's always an honor to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. So asset classes and intellectual property are patents,
right?
Trademarks, copyright.
Sure.
And another thing that people maybe don't always think of as intellectual property, because you don't actually do anything legal, are trade secrets.
Correct. You got all of them.
Okay. Whoa. I did pretty good. I've learned from you, David. So.
Good.
But trade secrets are things that you don't touch yourself, do you? Because nobody does anything. Maybe you probably advise people about trade secrets, but an example of trade secrets is the 11 herbs and spices in the Colonel Sanders chicken, right?
Absolutely.
Or the famous Coca-Cola formula.
Well, even someone like who your web developer is. You know,
right.
If I saw your website and said, I like this guy's website, I could save a lot of money if I knew who his web developer was.
Right.
You know, if I could talk that guy into redoing it, and the fact that you've already paid for that.
I've already paid for the R&D on that thing, yeah.
Right.
Well, and I actually, you know, had a conversation with my web developers and said, you know, I expect what you've done for me to become a conflict of interest for anybody else who wants to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Not to prevent them from making a living, but I've actually, you know, asked them about, we have an understanding about certain things that you know, that are mine.
Well, and that's important. It brings us to, you know, one of today's topics about copyright is many people don't recognize the importance of when you're hiring anyone, whether it's a third party graphic artist or a third party web developer. With copyright law, you've got to get those agreements in writing that this is a work for hire agreement, and you
right.
own the underlying work. Otherwise, that's not true.
What do you tell us about that? So if I hire somebody to build to draw a logo for me, and they tell me, okay, it's going to cost you $500 for me to do this logo, and I say, all right, go to work, and they do the work and they deliver the logo, and I pay them for that. Who owns that logo?
Well, you have the right to use it, but they own the copyright and the logo.
Really?
Right. And that's why in copyright law you have to have work-for-hire agreements in writing. That's one of the key differences. And I am always skeptical, and I've used the online logo preparation type websites before, and
yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised that they had pretty balanced agreements that made it clear that, yes, all the rights were being transferred to me. So
right.
if you work with a bigger company that does this all the time, they know that you should own what you paid for. You know, it's common
right.
sense.
Right.
But if you're kind of trying to be the nice guy informally by the handshake and honorably,
yeah.
that's how you get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then if things go south, you know, and the relationship goes bad, it can cost you.
So if 25 years ago, what's the Nike guy's name? What's his name? Knight. Yeah, Phil Knight. Phil Knight, right?
Right.
Thank you, Johnny. the Nike guy 25, 30 years ago, whatever, he hires somebody to pays him $500 to do the swoosh, and they don't sign any kind of an agreement about who owns what. And now that swoosh is making Nike lots of money because it's their brand, right?
Right.
It's the face of their brand. Can that person come back and try to get royalties from him?
Absolutely. And a good real-world example of that just happened within the last 6 months with a small film company that did event planning for Walmart.
Yeah.
And they recorded Walmart's office parties for like the past 30 years.
Right.
And ultimately, they owned all the copyright in that film footage. And when Walmart fired them, they sell it on the internet now.
Wow. How about, and Walmart can't do anything about it.
Right.
20
till. There was a lawsuit.
More stuff just like this after these messages with our good friend David Dossi. It's opening my eyes, I'll tell you that. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. And also our blog is jimsblog.biz. But if you remember smallbusinessadvocate.com, you can actually get to all those others. Just remember, that's the big daddy website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, because the blog link is there. The link to Ask Jim is there. So check all that out. Go there first if you want. That'll be simple, smallbusinessadvocate.com. You can get to all the other things that we have there. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And check it out and use it to your advantage. David Dossi is our guest. He's our good friend and our intellectual property attorney in the Brain Trust and in my business. And we're talking about copyrights. And David, you were telling us about almost kind of a horror story about who owns what. And, you know, I've had people to build things for me, to draw things for me, to create things for me, and I don't think I always got that. I was always a little bit unsure about who owned what. So is there a form I need to keep on file where that I send to these people and say, okay, when you do work for me, I need you to sign this?
Well, I think that any time you engage, you know, someone outside your organization, you ought to have it in writing in some form of contract.
Yeah.
And then once you've kind of put that in your standard procedures, if you will, as informal as they may be, you need to always think about, okay, is there the likelihood that any intellectual property of value is being created here? And if it's, you know, someone that's doing even as something as simple as new business card design or new letterhead, you know, that's something that you want to be able to use forever, essentially, and you're paying for it to be developed, you should. So you just have to stop and think, anytime you're about to sign a contract, is there anything of intellectual property value that may be created here, and is there any clauses in this agreement that address who owns it? And if there
aren't, could it be just as simple as typing something up and saying, John Jones agrees, the undersigned agrees that he is working for me for hire, and whatever products are created from this relationship belong to XYZ Corporation, signed XYZ Corporation and John Jones. Is that,
absolutely,
could it be that simple?
Absolutely. In fact, if you Google work for hire agreement, you're going to find thousands and thousands of form agreements for different type of, you know, projects.
Right. So folks, you know, don't be naive about that, as I have been in the past. And so even, and of course, when the issue comes up, is not going to be, most people are not going to, there's not going to be an issue with most people unless you hit it big, right? That's when it really becomes an issue.
And it's like that story I was saying about Walmart. This small business in their hometown had 30 years of file footage of office parties, and, you know, there were a lot of office parties where there were senior executives dressed up as women doing skits on TV.
It's called You Bet Your Job Prom Night.
Right. And, you know, all of a sudden, when they decide to outsource that work or whatever, and you've got a disgruntled small business that can't pay their employees, they've got to look for other, you know, revenue streams.
Right.
And they did. And, of course, Walmart was not happy with that.
And that wouldn't have been an issue 20 years ago, but with YouTube,
right?
And the internet, that gave them a whole new marketplace, didn't it?
Well, absolutely, and they were selling it to a lot of news organizations. And I remember a story where they interviewed the guy, and they were explaining different packages they had and how much you could charge by the minute for file footage, and it was pretty amazing.
So, what are some of the myths of copyright?
Well, you know, one of them is if you don't register a work with the Library of Congress, then you don't have any protection. So people go to the Library of Congress website, which is copyright.gov, and if I searched Jim Blasting Game and saw that, well, there's nothing on here for Jim Blasting Game, you know, that there's a fallacy that I could go and essentially copy all your newsletters and everything else.
Right.
And
that's
just false, because copyright protection starts as soon as I create something. So I could write a poem right now, and I have copyright protection on that.
Even without putting the little circle C on it?
Exactly. And now, if I really thought this was a good poem, I would take it and I would send it to the Library of Congress with my $45 check, and I would register that. So then it would be registered copyright federally, and that would give me a whole nother bag of rights. And that $45 filing fee is often the best intellectual property investment you can make for what it gets you.
Both of my books are registered with the Library of Congress.
Right. Yeah. All books will be. You know, if you're working with a publisher, it's the smaller things that people often overlook.
Right. But if I write an article, if I write a column, if I blog something, you know, it's even though all my websites have our copyright imprint on them. You know, all that's copyrighted, and so one of the myths I think people hear is that if I mail it to myself and don't open it, it postmarks, and I mail it to myself, it belongs to me. Is that true?
Right. No. There are a lot of old wives' tales like that. that doesn't get you any more than you've already afforded yourself.
Basically, today you waste 42 cents. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
But it is important, isn't it, to go ahead and whatever you think you own, whatever you've created, go ahead and put a circle C on it, if it's a written or whatever kind of work it is, so that people know that you understand what your rights are.
Well, it's a good deterrent, that's for sure. It's not required, but it lets people know that you take this seriously and don't want anyone copying.
This is mine and I own it, exactly. Hold on to that thought, Dave. We'll take a quick break, folks. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. We've got our good buddy David Dossie with us. He's helping us understand some of the myths and the realities of copyright and other intellectual property issues. David, we need your website, please.
It's invention-protection.com.
All right, invention-protection.com. So check that out when you get a chance, folks. That's not your grandfather's patent attorney website. Lots of good stuff there. Okay, David, other myths, other things that we need to know about copyright.
Well, one of the biggest ones is the belief that as long as you give credit to the author, that you can use the material. So in today's internet world, you know, everyone loves cutting and pasting material off others' websites. And just because you can do that doesn't mean you should do that. And just because you do it and then put where you got it from doesn't mean that you're allowed to do that.
And, so explain yourself. Give us some more of an explanation.
Well, what you find is a lot of people will essentially, probably, I wouldn't be surprised if people have copied your newsletters, whole article from your newsletter, and then just put courtesy of or written by author Jim Blasingame.
Right. They would just say, you're talking about the whole work.
Right.
The entire work. What if they found something in a paragraph that I'd written, And they say, you know, according to Jim Blasingame in an article titled So-and-So, he says so-and-so, and this is what I think about that. What do you think? What about that?
Well,
that's okay, isn't it?
Right. One of the big, another big myth is about the fair use exemptions, and people often, I guess, make themselves feel better when they copy something by saying, "Oh, that's within fair use," when actually fair use is a very limited exception. What you described would most likely be fair use
because they commentated on what I said.
Right, and it's a small excerpt from a bigger work. But I could not copy a whole article from your newsletter,
right,
cut and paste it on my website, and then write a couple sentences about it saying, you know, this is good,
right,
or this is bad,
right,
and think that I have not done anything wrong, and then it falls mm-hmm. within the fair use exception. So that's
so are you saying that the big thing about fair use is it's not fair use if you take the entire work and reproduce it?
Well, there are really four factors that you have to look at for this fair use exception, and I'm not kidding when I say it's very narrow. One of the factors is the purpose and character of the use. Another one's like the nature of the copyrighted work. A third, so one of the four factors is how much of that work you're using. Mm-hmm. You know, is it 1/4 of it or is it 1/100th of it? And then a fourth factor is the effect on the potential market. So by me reusing a portion of yours, is that likely to result in less sales for you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's really that the amount of the excerpt is really just one of four factors.
So in a court of law, would a judge or somebody say, okay, we're going to evaluate whether this harmed or helped the owner?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So somebody would be making a value judgment. Okay, turns out, in our opinion, this person reproducing your work actually told people about you and didn't harm you. Those kinds of decisions would be made.
And most of the time, most of the consuming public should not be relying on fair use as an argument.
Right.
You need to get permission ahead of time, or if you're relying on fair use, you better be a journalist that has someone that has advised them on, you know, this is legit the way you're handling this.
For example, we have hundreds and hundreds and thousands, actually, of articles that our Brain Trust members have deposited with us. We post, we make them available on our website. We feature them on our website. Well, we don't just go to their website and get those things without asking them if we can have them. And we ask them, and as people ask me, and we give them, they give us the right, and we post it and give them full attribution. And that's good business for both of us, see, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But it has to be with the permission.
That is always the smart way to handle copyright
right,
issues.
Right, right.
You can never go wrong with asking for permission.
Right, exactly. Now, and you know, I've seen my stuff. There's one place out there where I've seen people have gone and gotten my articles wholesale and reproduced them. In fact, I need to talk to you about that, David. Hey, David, invention-protection.com, right?
Exactly.
All right, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
David Dossey, ladies and gentlemen, he's the best, I promise you. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And let me remind you, folks, a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were made for. I'll see you later. Right after these messages, I'll be back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.